Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 172. I'm Rob Wright, security news director at TechTarget, and I am here with my security news writer, Alex Kalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob. How you doing?
As you can tell, I'm just in a super mood today. I'm full of energy.
I'm looking outside. I see the color gray where yeah. We are right now.
I'm excited to talk about today's topic, the ransomware task force, the newly announced ransomware task force in the United States, and what they call a comprehensive framework, recommendations for, I guess, both public and private organizations across the globe, really. It's an 80-page report that was just put out by the Institute for Security and Technology, and features a number of the organizations and security vendors that are part of the task force: Palo Alto Networks, Microsoft, Rapid7, Cyber Threat Alliance, and a ton of other private companies. And they put this report out today that is, it's interesting reading. It is sounding the alarm on the ransomware scourge that's really ramped up and really dominated security headlines in the last year. And they're recommending some very key actions.
Yeah,
I think. And we should discuss these recommendations, because there's five what they call priority recommendations in this report. And some of these are like you and I could have guessed what they were going to be. You know, hey, we need better coordination between international organizations, law enforcement efforts. We should be working hand in hand across borders to make sure that ransomware gangs don't have a safe haven. The United States needs to set an example and step up private public sort of cooperation between, you know, government agencies and the private sector. And those are the first two recommendations. And then it gets interesting. So the third one is governments should establish a cyber response and recovery fund to support ransomware response and other cybersecurity activities, mandate that organizations report ransomware payments, and require organizations to consider alternatives before making payments. And then there's another one here. It's the last one. The cryptocurrency sector that enables ransomware crime should be more closely regulated. Governments should require cryptocurrency exchanges, crypto kiosks, and over-the-counter trading desks, which I wasn't even sure what that was until I started reading about this, to comply with existing laws, including the Know Your Customer KYC law, anti-money laundering AML, and combating financing of terrorism, CFT. A lot of acronyms there. So, Alex, before we get into those specific recommendations, the overall thrust of this report is, you know, just reading it, it's very dire. The authors of the report say that the problem continues to get worse every day. The threat actors are making more money. The number of attacks is increasing. Everything's bad, so to speak, and it's going in the wrong direction. They threw some metrics in here. The average payment in 2020 showed a 171% increase compared to 2019.
Yep.
$312,000, more than $312,000. Victims paid $350 million, according to Chain Analysis, which is a cryptocurrency sort of analyst intelligence firm. It's not good. It seems like more organizations are paying. We'll get into that later. But like, just like the, you know, DHS, CISA, and other organizations have said recently, Like, this is a national security threat. Now, I guess, what's your impression of that and the tone of the report as, you know, things are dire and this is, you know, a threat not just to enterprises, but to, like, literally our way of life, critical infrastructure, government operations, et cetera, et cetera. It seems like we've made quite a jump in the last year.
Okay, so my thought on this is kind of loaded, I would say. The task force itself, which, well, there's, I was going to save this for when we talk about the ransomware stats later, but I'll just say it now. I think the task force itself is a good thing, independent of everything. It's good that it exists. It seems like what they're doing so far seems like about the right decisions to be making. Obviously, we'll see how impactful it is, et cetera, et cetera. But as for how dire of a situation ransomware is, I've been covering ransomware for 16, 18 months now. It's one of the core search security topics, but I would also call it the core thing I've happened to cover while doing search security stuff. And I feel some dread thinking about ransomware, because it's almost become a buzzword at this point. Like, ransomware is getting worse, except it is getting worse, and it's significantly getting worse every time. And it's one of those things where if you're not directly impacted by it, which, granted, I'm not, but if your life doesn't intersect with ransomware in some way, you don't see this stuff and you don't think it's a big issue. But as we're going to talk about in the stats thing, ransomware does keep getting significantly worse. More people are paying. The demands are getting higher. The consequences of these attacks are getting higher. Yeah. There are more victims. The ransomware tactics have gotten dramatically, like, more despicable in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's almost... Now, let me say this. Ransomware is not as bad as global warming when I make this comparison.
Go ahead. Yep.
But I'm just going to say that up front. But ransomware reminds me of, like, global warming on an even more compact scale, where if you're one of these people who doesn't see it and doesn't think about it, you might be more akin to say, like, this isn't a big deal. But if you're in a place in the world affected by it, in this case, if you're a company affected by ransomware or whatever, or you deal with this data a lot, it's a problem that's getting severely worse on such a fast scale. And something I think about not that infrequently is, what is the tipping point going to look like? When is that tipping point going to happen? Will the ransomware fundraising that these cyber criminals are getting going to result in huge supply chain attacks in the future? Or is that what's happening now?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, like, in the same way, the global warming comparison actually does make a lot of sense, because with global warming, you always think about what's the tipping point, or some people say we're already at whatever. Like, is it 2100? Is it 2080? In ransomware, it feels like sometime in the next maybe several to a few to who knows how many years, but not on a long-term scale, there's going to be some sort of horrible tipping point that we're getting dramatically close to. I'm scared what it looks like, and I'm very glad that private and public sectors are recognizing this. And like, I'm a very... when it comes to this kind of work, I want to be as anti-hyperbole as possible, obviously. Obviously. And my objective signal, my journalism signal goes off when I hear the government using language like this automatically.
Yeah.
But I kind of agree with a lot of it, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's your take?
Well, so I'll point out something in the report that I think really drives home the messaging. I too am sort of, I've always kind of been a little hesitant to invest, to fully invest in, like, when the government says something is a serious problem and or a threat and needs to be taken seriously, I just sort of have a, I don't know, a deep skepticism to that. But in this particular report, you know, right after that section in, I think it's like on page 8, where they talk about, you know, this is a national security threat, and here's why. I think like the third graph in that report is about hospitals and medical facilities. And, you know, they say 560 healthcare facilities were hit by ransomware in the U.S. alone last year. And you contrast that to when a number of ransomware gangs, right as sort of the pandemic was taking hold, it might have even been sort of prior to when the lockdowns began to take place or were implemented in mid-March here in the States. But a number of groups said, you know what? We're not going to hit hospitals. We're not going to hit medical facilities. We're not going to hit anybody who's, you know, treating patients. You know, the healthcare facilities could mean a lot of different things. You know, there's been debates about, like, you know, from the ransomware gangs that hit pharmaceutical companies, you know, them arguing that, hey, they're not treating patients. They're just, you know, they're a drug maker. That's not really a healthcare organization. So it's hard to know how many of those 560 organizations are really hospitals. But the point stands that, you know, we were sitting here thinking, like, oh, maybe we'll see a drop in the number of organizations hit. And I don't know what the number looks like for 2019 compared to 2020. 560 is a lot. And, you know, we've written stories about some of the ones that were hit, I don't want to say accidentally, maybe inadvertently, like an organization, like a ransomware gang was hitting, was intending to hit a university, and the ransomware spread through university network and hit a university affiliated hospital or medical center or something like that. Right. You know, those things happen. It's bad. And you're right. There doesn't seem to be any sort of line that organizations or that ransomware gangs are not willing to cross at this point. And that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're assessing the threat, yeah, you know, critical infrastructure, government operations, life-saving medical procedures. I mean, it all seems to be on the table right now. And it's a bad situation.
Yes, very bad situation. And then the COVID stuff with the hospitals and healthcare was very interesting, because I wrote a story about the hospital stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was told at the time was hospitals aren't necessarily a major part of the healthcare industry that's getting hit. And like, there's bill processing, there's biotech, there's research, there's all these things. But hospitals were still on some level getting hit regardless. And what this kind of says is like, okay, ransomware operators say they're not going to attack hospitals or healthcare during the pandemic. It doesn't matter what they say, because there's so many ransomware operators now, and ransomware is a service. And a lot of hospitals don't necessarily have completely secure postures.
Yeah.
So someone who does know what they're doing, kind of, and is doing ransomware as a service and hits the right hospital and the right community at the right time, they didn't make any promise. And I'm not saying something like this happened and there was significant ransomware injuries or deaths because of this. And that German hospital thing, like, it turned out that maybe that wasn't exactly a ransomware related death.
Yeah, right.
She may have died anyways, whatever.
Yep.
But it doesn't, those Rotlow's honor among thieves type promises don't matter because there's too many people for those words to mean anything anymore. Even if those groups kept their word, which I'm not sure actually happened anyways.
I guess that's a long way of saying that I don't think that this is an overstatement. And I think to your point about a tipping point, it feels like the government is trying to get ahead of this, the U.S. government and the private partners as part of the ransomware task force here. And just reading the reactions from folks on Twitter, it seems like, you know, even if there are some minor quibbling with certain recommendations or how to implement them or if they're realistic or not, it feels like this is getting almost universal sort of approval, like, yes, we need to do something right now. Turning to the specific recommendations that we want to discuss. Mm-hmm. Let's start real quick with the cyber response and recovery funds. I don't know. Do you think that the organizations are going to think twice about paying if there's a fund that says, hey, instead of paying, we'll help you out? Because that's going to involve making contact to the government and reporting the incident to the FBI or whoever, whatever law enforcement body. And I know that part of paying ransomware gangs is to avoid, it's not just because organizations think, you know, victims think that they're going to get back online quicker, which a lot of times they don't. It's because they don't want to disclose it and they don't want the government knowing that they were hit and they don't want the government maybe snooping around their network to do forensics or whatever. So do you think that is, this will make a difference? Do you think it's I think it's a good thing to propose. I'm not sure how many people are going to take them up on it. What do you think?
I agree with that take completely. The idea of a cyber response and recovery fund is, it's a good thing to try. I agree that I'm skeptical about how it's going to turn out, because at a certain point, if a company thinks, I'm guessing the two reasons a company pays the ransom, I'm sure there's multiple reasons, but I think two of the main reasons would be, one, in case their backups are screwed or, and they don't have the data otherwise, which, I mean, I don't run a company. I don't know how difficult it is, but in 2021, like, what are you doing? Not having sort of storage that isn't directly connected. But anyways, and the other thing is less downtime, which doesn't end up really being the case. And because of those two things, I don't think these are really gonna change those thought processes.
Yeah, it may take some time.
I agree.
And it's just, you know, I know they say, like, we want to require organizations to consider alternatives before making payments to the threat actors. You can make an organization go through hoops and consider alternatives, but it feels like I'm probably just going to be box checking at some point and it will just delay. And one thing I learned with the story I did on ransomware negotiators and talking with several organizations and people that do direct negotiations with these threat actors, story went live earlier this month, was, you know, these threat actors want to get paid fast and they put these, you know, these timers on negotiations. Like, you got to make contact with them in 24 to 48 hours. And then you have a week before, you know, you make a payment or the price is doubled or they publish the data or whatever. You don't have a lot of time to really consider your options. So I don't know how that's going to work in sort of like in the real world. I'm curious to see how that is going to be practiced in reality. The bigger one And this is something that we've written about. Our colleague Ariel Waldman wrote a story. God, I think it was a year ago. It seems like 10 years ago, thanks to the pandemic. But I believe it was about a year ago. I think it was almost exactly 12 months ago. She wrote a story about you know, cryptocurrency tracking and how good law enforcement and security vendors have gotten in terms of figuring out who's getting paid and tracking the payments through Bitcoin and even some other cryptocurrencies, and sort of the tactics that cyber criminals were using to essentially launder cryptocurrency payments and wash them. And one of the things that was discussed in the story were these cryptocurrency exchanges or mixers. And lo and behold, this report says, you know, we need greater regulation for these things, for the exchanges, the kiosks, the over-the-counter trading desks, all these places that cyber criminals use to wash their money and make it harder to figure out who received like these illicit payments from victims. And, you know, in some cases, like this is really wild, like the things that they were doing. I remember, I think it, in Ariel's story, somebody mentioned at one point, or there was a case involving like massive amounts of, I think it was iTunes gift cards, and the Department of Treasury, and I think the DOJ had busted, I think it was hackers affiliated with the North Korean, yes, it was the North Korean nation state group Lazarus. They 1.4 million worth of Bitcoin payments, I believe from ransomware, that was transferred into prepaid iTunes gift cards. Like that's incredible. Like it's just wild ways for these hackers, these cyber criminals, to sort of cover up and hide their money. So I guess what's your take? I mean, I don't know how much you know about the cryptocurrency stuff, or how steeped you are in it. But any thoughts there on that
number priority? Five?
Yes.
Yeah. The word that I'm thinking about here is regulated. Is that word regulated?
Yes.
And I think that's gonna, because of how counter that runs to the spirit of cryptocurrency.
Yes.
I think that's going to meet a lot of resistance. And then, well, the other word here is should, which really gives them a big out to not really do that much about it. It's a recommendation. I won't read too much into that one. But the idea that it should be more closely regulated is really, it's counter to crypto. And I think when you go on Reddit, when you go on people, like when you go on Twitter, you go on different places and you read comments by the people who are really, really into crypto. Mm-hmm. And you build a profile of some of these enthusiasts. They won't be happy with this idea at all, even if they're not buying these kinds of goods on the dark web, even if they don't use the dark web at all, and they love that crypto identity, that yeah. crypto life, the Elon Musk style that these people sort of consider themselves, right?
Yep.
That's very counter to being okay with regulation, and I think doing so won't be popular. And will probably cause a big fight. But I don't think it's a bad thing either, as long as government doesn't try to take over crypto. Like, for example, yeah. knowing your customer, making it so police don't have to fight so hard to know who paid for drugs on the internet. Or, like, whatever. Anti-money laundering, which is kind of in the same sort of field. Combating financing of terrorism. All this is all these three things are saying increased visibility. This is what they want, is increased visibility.
Yeah.
And the second side of this is, it's valid not to trust the government.
Sure. Sure. I mean, the whole point.
Those are the two sides. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole point of crypto was to have a decentralized, sort of unregulated currency. And you're right. This is not going to go over well. I wonder if governments are going to have the fortitude to implement stuff like this. Because let's say, you know, I pointed this out in our Slack discussion, our news group discussion. But if you have a bunch of organizations or a bunch of countries that decide, yes, we're going to implement Know Your Customer and all these other rules for cryptocurrencies and cryptocurrency exchanges, et cetera. But there's a handful that don't. The cyber criminals are just going to use the outlets and the nations that don't have that regulation. And I guess you're back to square one. So I think you sort of need critical mass here. You need sort of collective buy-in from a number of different nations and to make this effective. I do think this would help a lot, because it's way too easy for these guys to tell a victim to pay in Monero and it goes into the wallet. The wallet is, you know, the money is withdrawn, or the coins are withdrawn from that wallet, moved to a different, you know, put into a mixer, sold through a desk, and there's no visibility. And then you can't find, it makes recovering the funds harder. It makes obviously finding these guys harder. But yeah, it's, I don't want to say it's a pie in the sky. Like it's a pipe dream. It's not. I think that as this problem gets worse, the worse this gets, the more likely governments will do this.
Yeah.
But I don't know that we're there yet.
Right. So. The one other thing to think about is, this is making me think about the Pirate Bay a little bit. And thinking about how the Pirate Bay, 20 years old, by the way, little disclosure, do not pirate stuff, okay? But but think about the Pirate Bay as this, what, 20-year-old website.
Yeah.
This sort of illegal piracy website. It still exists.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons it still exists is because, well, one, I think there's been a number of owners over the years, and there's a number of different Pirate Bays. So I think that's part of it. But I think another part of it is, if you're getting too highly regulated, it's the internet. Just go somewhere else.
Yeah, I know.
Where you're not going to get regulated. Yeah. Also, cryptocurrency, I'm guessing some of them are so decentralized that there might not be a boss of Monero or a boss of Dogecoin who can implement extensive tracking if it wasn't there originally.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works, but I'm saying, like, this right. is another problem with it. Also, there are so many different cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin became easy to track. They moved to Monero.
Yeah.
Right? There are so many options that yeah. it's just, it seemed this one. So the Cyber Response and Recovery Fund is like, okay, I don't know if this will work, but it's worth a try.
Yep.
This one is an okay idea if there's a high, like, warrant, a high enough warrant standard
sure.
to allow people to look into it. But thinking about the logistics of how you would regulate cryptocurrency when you have startups making their own coins, like,
yeah.
in so many different countries. In the U.S., you're, and it's easy for us to think about it from a U.S. perspective, but what about the Philippines? What about right. China? What about Great Britain? What's their regulation? Will it even matter? Probably not. And then the internet still isn't globally controlled, and it never no. probably will be. You yeah. know, I'm speaking in circles a little bit, but you know what I'm saying. This
I
is
do,
gonna,
yeah.
This, there's no way this can actually practically occur the more I think about it.
It would be extremely tough, and it would take I think what it would end up taking is, in addition to the governments implementing these regulations, or at least a significant number, you would also need maybe private sector pressure to basically say we're not going to accept these currencies, or we're not going to do any sort of business with them, because you know we don't want to be like, we just don't want any part, we don't know where the money is coming from, and we need more visibility into this. And like, if you have fewer and fewer banks, private sector operations, companies that will accept cryptocurrency payment, well, then, you know, then I don't want to say it solves the problem, but it definitely, it makes it a little bit more likely, I think, along with a government buy-in for something like this to actually take shape and to have an effect. But it seems like a tough hill to climb. And again, I don't know that the will and the fortitude is there to do this just yet. It feels like, you know, again, we may be a little bit ahead of that inflection point, as you described. But I do think it's worth the task force bringing this up now.
Yes.
As much as we feel like it's maybe sort of behind the curve and things are already bad, they could definitely get worse. And I do want to bring up, you know, some metrics from a couple of reports that we got this week. We wrote about one of them, one from Coveware, security vendor, and then another from Sophos, endpoint security vendor, about the situation. And I'll kick it off with this tweet real quick from a well-known security researcher, Kevin Beaumont in the UK. He was weighing in on the task force report, and he said something interesting that really stood out to me. I thought it was hilarious too. But he tweeted this morning, "I remain genuinely concerned that a small number of Apex ransomware groups are getting hundreds of millions of US dollars in payment each year. That gives them more money to buy zero-day exploits than many big nation states. It's like giving rocket launchers to YouTuber fans." You know, that last line is scary and hilarious. But I bring that up because this is something that Coveware said in their report. They noticed that, you know, first of all, these organizations, these cyber criminal groups, the organized crime groups, they're making a lot more money. The average payment in, I think they said Q4 was, or in Q1 this year was 220,000. And, you know, the attacks are up, and they started to see this trend where, instead of just relying on RDP, brute forcing, or passwords that they buy off the black market or the dark web, specific groups like the Clop ransomware group were using vulnerabilities. And they were, or they were buying access from quote unquote specialists or sort of access brokers on the dark web, where these guys would sell access to specific organizations, or they would sell a list of organizations that they knew had not patched, like, you know, these VPN flaws from Fortinet or PulseSecure. And so the you know, these ransomware groups like Clop would buy that access and then hit those groups and make off with a lot of money. And that's terrifying, because if we're going in that direction where these guys are using, you know, not just known vulnerabilities, but like the Acelion FTA, Zero Days, and other places, that is so bad. I can't overstate how bad that is. And then, you know, the Sophos report had similar metrics. I think their average ransom paid by just mid-market, mid-size organizations was like $170,000. That's a lot of money for a mid-market organization, whether or not they have cyber insurance or not. And then they had interesting data on the number of companies that paid. I that's not good. So that was on page 9, I think you said, Alex.
Yeah. It said more victims are paying the ransom. So 2020, based on their survey, 26% paid the ransom to get the data back. In 2021, that number is 32%.
Yeah. I gotta believe that, like, across, not just for Sophos customers or companies that they do IR for, I gotta believe the overall number there across the board, entire world, is probably significantly higher than that, just anecdotally from what I've heard from people.
Yeah, and it's I definitely feel like in the last year, I know people have been saying it longer, but I think in the last year, people have been speaking louder that you shouldn't pay the ransom.
Yes.
But still, I was telling you this before the podcast, that a company doesn't care if someone like me or someone like you or someone like Sophos or FireEye or people way smarter than us who know this stuff very, very deeply are saying, don't pay the ransom. It doesn't really help your situation. They don't care because they're, well, for multiple reasons. One, if they don't have backups of their data that are available, like maybe their backups got compromised too, then it doesn't really matter what people's opinion is. Two, if they think the downtime is going to be easier, doesn't matter, even though that doesn't end up being the case. And then three, cyber insurance, right, makes it so that in some cases the ransom isn't really their problem directly. Am I on the right track with that?
Yeah. You know, the task force report brings up something on that note that's interesting. You know, for all the recommendations and sort of the you know, we got to get tough on ransomware, we've got to do something to curb payments and disrupt the business model, disrupt the mechanisms that these cyber criminals have to get paid, they explicitly say in this task force report that banning ransom payments or criminalizing them is not really feasible. It's not something that can be done right now effectively, and it doesn't really solve the underlying problem at this juncture. And I thought that was interesting.
Yes.
Because they're kicking the can down the road a little. But that's not going to be there long. Like, it's that discussion is 1,000% coming. All the negotiators I talked with, all of the incident response firms that I've talked with, think that, you know, yes, it's not feasible. Yes, this is, you know, we in the InfoSec community think this is not something that can be enforced. And, you know, you're essentially going to tell a lot of smaller companies that they have to go out of business.
Yeah.
If they don't make the payment.
But there could be sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. There could be situations maybe, and I'm probably not the first person to think about this, where maybe the government requires that before paying the ransom, an attack needs to be reported to the government.
Yeah.
And then maybe some sort of permission-based thing, and if they don't report it and that comes back, that has legal consequences. I don't know if that would be a way to get around it.
Maybe. I have asked about that, and again, no one seems to think that this will be able to be enforced in practice. Like, it's just too much. And if you're going to devote people to ransomware, why are we devoting people to sort of tracking payments and figuring out who's paid and who hasn't, you know, who hasn't paid and why? Like, we should be doing other things with those resources. I think that's totally fair. But I also know that, like I said, every one of these guys that I've talked with over the past 2 years now about this topic, because it's been an ongoing thing, thinks the day is coming where somebody's going to propose something, whether it's in Congress or there's going to be, you know, something where they're going to try, the government is going to try to prohibit payments. Or at least they would not be surprised, because it's gotten so, and these guys have been alarmed by it. They're just like, the payments are just commonplace, that it's alarming. So
what do you think about either subsidized support or tax credits for cybersecurity posture?
Yeah,
that would be enforced, but that'd be difficult.
Yep.
You know what I'm
saying? Yeah. I do. I 100% know exactly what you're saying. Like, I've heard some wild sort of theories about just all sorts of ideas about how to sort of minimize the financial burden on a victim. And some are downright crazy to me. I'm not a business owner, so you know, maybe they're not really crazy. And some make sense, but I think that's kind of where that you know, number three priority or recommendation in the task force is going, you know, with this fund. It's like, please don't pay. We'll help you recover. We'd rather give you this money, that, you know, this taxpayer money, frankly, than have you sort of feed money back into this system, this vicious cycle, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. You know, because as Kevin Beaumont noted, like, this is all we're doing now is just, we're giving these guys millions. And they may be just investing it in mostly in Lamborghinis with vanity license plates saying, you know, hacker or thief on it, as the Evil Corp guy did. But there's probably some very, like, those apex predators in the ransomware field that are just, they're making business decisions and they're investing in their craft, in their operation, and getting better at it. And like that is not good. They've got to, they know that they have to do something about that. And my fear is, like I said, we're kicking the can down the road right now, but it's not going to be down the road for long. We're approaching a point where that's going to need to be reckoned with. So,
yeah,
but overall, I think, it's good to know that they're having these discussions, the government, other governments, obviously the private sector, nonprofit organizations, like, we're doing something about this. Whether or not this stuff is realistic and will be implemented in the way that we want it to be or in a reasonable fashion, who knows, but they're doing something. So
sure.
And we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Alex, thank you for chatting with me about this task force report and this weighty topic on this lengthy podcast.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Rob.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we'll see you next time.